So, Paladin, thank you for being here, as always. You're free to go now.
Hooray, thank you. And good luck to everything.
That was your panic.
You're free to go away until we need you again.
Yes, we'll see you next week, Paladin.
Okay, good luck. Take care.
See you.
Bye. Scott?
Hi, Paladin. It's nice to meet you. Oh, okay. Well, I've been waiting so long to meet you. Oh, never mind. I really need to meet a new friend today. Well, it was good talking to you, pal. Okay. You nerds are bullies.
Podcasts, The Final Frontier. These are the audio logs of the podcast Superhero Time. Their 5-month mission? Explore old episodes of Star Trek, alienate even more listeners, and boldly plow your mom where no one has come before.
With XV.
This is not the first time Fort Max has become a radio.
Hey, Mickey.
They're being handled with all the grace and elegance of throwing a ham at somebody's face.
Ken.
What? Okay.
And Fort Max.
He's never a player of the worth. In four, the 1142, I mean, he basically was second.
So this week on that one episode of Star Trek, it's time for The Next Generation.
In HD! Because guess what happened in the last week at Netflix?
Somebody flipped the switch.
Yeah.
HD for hot damn, this looks good.
No shit, right?
Doesn't it, though? Blu-ray Next Generation is pretty as hell.
I am really impressed, actually, because I don't own any of the sets.
I like it because you can see exactly how smooth Patrick Stewart's head is.
It's like a Shorn scrotal. Makeup rubbed off on his collar.
Well, yes. Yes. There's that. Data does not quite make the transition as well as some things in the show.
No.
His hands look creepy.
Data's makeup was made for SD televisions.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, it absolutely was. Also made for SD television. In the early part of season 3, some of the ship models, the alien ship models, those are very made for standard def television.
Luckily, we don't have any alien ships this week.
Oh, SD. I thought you meant like super deformed. I thought everyone's head was going to be really big.
No, that's the Kamen Riders. No, Ken, you should go back. You should go back and look at, I think the episode is The Survivors from early season 3.
Okay, I'll run that in the background later on.
And just like pay attention to the ship model that shows up, because damn, that thing is rough.
Got it.
Damn, that thing is rough. So we are in season 3 today for Next Generation. It's The Offspring, which I think was Scott's suggestion, actually.
It was. It was. This is 316. So everybody, Star Trek 316.
I think some of our panelists have words for you on this choice, Scott.
Oh.
What's that?
Fort Max, would you like to share your feelings about this episode?
That was a sad episode.
Yeah, well, I was watching it, and I was like, I came here for spaceships and phasers, not for feels.
And yet
I got feels.
And yet you suggested it.
Perhaps. Yeah, I forget how feely it was. It was so full of feels. I'm all feeled out.
It feels really?
Yes. For those of us who have souls, hey, Mickey, yes, it affected us on an emotional level, okay?
Well, Data wasn't sad.
Yeah, well...
He doesn't have a soul.
Well, he doesn't have a soul, so...
Right.
he doesn't do sad or feel or...
Not until Genesis.
That's the crew is kind of like...
Which is kind of the sad part. So, wait, are you saying, hey, Mickey is Pulaski?
Oh,
they're
dear.
Very similar. Have you ever seen the two of them in a room together?
Well, no, they're both not. Old.
Yeah, they're both old. They both hate everything.
They both technically cut on bodies.
Oh, God.
Oh. I do need a maternity uniform.
Now, Now, on the one hand, Pulaski's are supposed to stay alive.
Mickey, when are you due? I had no idea.
Well, it may be stillborn. It's been there for quite a while.
Oh, God.
What, did you have Chipotle the other day? What happened?
No Pulaski this week. No real pressure either.
No Pulaski. We're on season 3. We are post-Pulaski. So we're PP season 3, episode 16.
There's no half the cast.
We'll come back to more Pulaski another day.
Yeah. There's no basically half the cast this week, honestly.
Yeah, was Worf there?
Worf wasn't there.
Not even a shot of him. Huh.
Riker gets a scene, but it is kind of fantastic.
Yeah.
He has like one word of dialogue.
And it is the Rikeriest thing.
Yep. Yep.
So if someone ever asks you, so what is Riker like in TNG? You can show them the 15 seconds that he's on screen in this episode, and it'll say everything you need to know about the character.
But no, it won't. He doesn't step over any chair backs in there.
Yeah, I mean, really, if you have to pick one representative trait of Riker to show someone to represent the character, you need to get that super cut of him swinging his leg over every chair back he can find.
All you need, no dialogue necessary.
Just like that super cut of Worf getting shut down every suggestion.
But it's like, if you show them that super cut of Riker, the fact that he is a man who will ram the ship into anything once he gets command will not surprise you in the slightest.
Yeah.
So instead of the leg lean, should we call it the scrote dangle?
He teabags that chair.
Yeah.
It's his personal battle bridge.
He mounts every chair like he's...
It's amazing how much we're talking about Riker for how little he's in this episode.
Yeah, but he makes up for it, though.
Yeah, it's just such an impactful Riker scene.
Anyway.
Right, so Mickey, why don't you take the summary this week? Unless Scott's feeling brave and wants to try his first summary.
Oh, Papa's cherry.
Oh, wow. I don't know if I'm ready for that. I mean, I don't know if I can sit and talk about Star Trek as I watch it. This might be a stretch for what I do, you know, way too often anyway.
Sounds perfect. Scott, let's give you your first time right here live.
Usually
on the
when you do it, you're talking to yourself in an empty room into a bowl of ice cream.
Okay, now let's be honest. That's not really that much different from what we're doing anyway.
Right.
Yeah, so I've got a bowl full of rum, so, you know, and a spoon.
You got a bowl full of rum?
Yeah, and a spoon.
Are you trying to be Headmaster Don?
There's nothing but the
except
rum.
Don.
I'm going to assume it's because it's Ben's turn to do the dishes.
You'd be right.
So you're taking in rum like it's soup.
I don't think he's got a spoon.
Usually, when someone's imbibing some sort of chemical via bowl, it's usually not rum. The spoon is what worried me the most, though. If you have like a candle and a spoon, then we need to have a little talk. So for our hit this week, as I said, we're doing TNG 316. Everyone, open your Bibles. So, all right. So Riker is off in some conference somewhere. We get a beautiful ship shot, and it looks gorgeous in HD.
God, it does. I think I'm going to just, like, run the entire series in the background for the next few weeks.
And and one thing I noticed, so we have Geordi and Troy and the kid, whoever remembers his name. Hey, apparently he went off and did some other stuff eventually. They're all being summoned by Data trying to figure out what he did.
Nobody
he has been doing something secretive.
Nobody wants to remember his name, but, you know, he's there.
No, so I like that, like, Wesley comments that the door's been locked the whole time, and Geordi's like, uh-huh, and how do you know it's locked?
That was actually a pretty good line.
Wah, wah, wah.
You're such a little shit, Wesley.
So they go in, and there's Data holding a foot. So I think his secret is he's got a foot fetish. He's like looking very guilty.
No, no,
like,
this
puts
is,
it away
this
really
is Data.
Quick.
He doesn't do fetishes. Clear. What has to mean, the only thing this can mean is he's murdered someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's clearly loading parts into a drum.
Oh, you are early. The lie has not begun to work yet.
So they walk in and they're like, Data, what is this all about? And then out of the ceiling drops what I can only assume is a humanoid fleshlight.
Oh, God, this was so horrifying. Yeah, that's pretty
look
God.
At the mouth.
God. I'm trying not to. I'm doing my best to not look at anything. Least of all its face.
Oh, this is one of the most terrifying creatures I've ever seen, because it's like half naked but half not. It's got these prostheses, but it's like painted skin too, so I don't even know the prosthetics start and the skin begins.
I think the whole thing's a bodysuit.
Data held on to Yara's corpse and eventually it gave birth to this.
It does have her chest. yeah, so they modeled the living flesh out of a Tasha Yar's body.
No, they removed it from Tasha Yar's body. It's where Data impregnated her.
Oh, that's right. So now it's like an amalgam between the two.
You see, what it was is Data removed this from Tasha's body right after she died and has been growing it in a tube the whole time. But it hasn't quite worked out, as you can see.
Right, it's slightly more attractive than Tasha Yar was originally.
It was a completely failed pregnancy.
It takes after Data.
No. What else about it, hey Mickey? No? Nothing? Okay.
I don't even think Mickey will go there.
I don't even know how to go there. I'm trying. I just don't know how to tie it in.
There were rape gangs. There were gangs that raped.
No, but it doesn't relate to, like, failed pregnancies.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, rape gangs are always relevant. Especially when something has failed, like a colony. Yeah.
Right. Because I wonder if Federation people do that. They go to a planet, and they're like, okay, we're going to be homesteaders, we're going to create a colony, there's going to be, you know, 1,000 of us or whatever, but I swear to God, if this place fails, I'm raping. That is my plan.
Welcome back.
Hi.
This is Roddenberry's ideal future where humanity's evolved past such terrible things as rape gangs. Except for Tasha Yar's planet, which apparently where they ship all the...
It was completely failed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. HD looks glorious.
They just didn't work out.
So at first when I was watching this episode, the actress that had play Lol, I was very unimpressed with it. I mean, the first like 10 minutes, I was like, oh, this is so cheesy. She's having to act like a robot. It's so awful. But about halfway through, man, you get sucked in.
Yeah. And now I'm going back to your description.
Fleshlight
the...
joke again.
Well, I was also thinking it looks a little bit like the entrance of a garbage disposal. There's like this whirling blade system on the inside, like a lamprey's mouth.
Oh God, what if
it's a trap?
So Picard is in here and is like, "What have you done?" And Data's like, "I procreated. I don't see anybody else asking you about that."
I mean.
He's got a point.
Which is a great line.
No, I mean, like, considering there was the whole episode in season 2 about, you know, Data having rights as a sentient being just like anybody else, Picard is sure giving a double standard to this.
Oh, this episode was directed by Jonathan Frakes.
That's why he wasn't hardly in it.
Oh.
But I think that Picard almost kind of realizes that, and he's kind of like fighting with his logic versus, you know, amazingly, it's somewhere down in there, his heart.
Yeah, it takes most of the episode for him to finally make that reconciliation.
Because what's on Picard's mind is the complications this is going to bring him.
And you can, and you know, all credit to Patrick Stewart as an actor, you can tell that in his, you know, dialogue, in the way he acts, these expressions, without him having to actually come out and say it, which is a good, it's a really good example of show don't tell.
Yeah, every line he delivers has like twice the components to it of what is he feeling when he's saying this. He's not sure about any of what he's doing.
His initial instinct is to, well, what is the Federation line on this going to be, versus what do I actually feel?
Mm-hmm.
And it's neat because this is still early in the TNG where he hasn't quite cohesed with the crew yet. I mean, he doesn't really consider his crew his family just yet.
It's not really early at this point, is it? It's like most of the way through season three, and that's almost halfway through the series.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, I was just thinking, just the way he treats it is much more of a, he can see both sides of the situation, but he does, he's not like immediately defending Data and how dare you take his child. I mean, he's very like, whatever.
Later on, well, you know.
Basically, post Best of Both Worlds, Picard becomes a lot more tight with the crew.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like,
and
you know,
in a long form narrative sense, that works super well.
Yeah, it's like, you know, say, Insurrection wouldn't have happened middle of this at this point in the series. Mm-hmm.
Oh no, no, no.
God, no.
And I like, you know, the whole, and like Best of Both Worlds being partly built out of, well, we're not sure if Patrick Stewart is going to want to come back next year, and then he did. I think that's what kind of gave on the production side. All right, let's make Picard and the crew like, you know, more bonded, closer together, because we've got this for the long haul now.
Right.
Which has nothing to do with this episode as such. In, well, I mean, a little, but I mean, that's more like,
well,
we're
you
getting
do
off
see
track
him,
here.
Yeah, you do see him care about his crew members more in their personal life. Like, he's concerned about Data. He actually defends, go, this is his child, and, you know, this means something.
And
he could have been a lot colder
like,
about
and
it.
Starfleet might try to do something stupid. Gosh, I'm not ready for having to deal with this.
Well, of course Starfleet's going to do something stupid. Starfleet always does something stupid.
It's Starfleet.
Uh-huh.
So he's walking down the corridor. He's talking to Troy, and it's another good episode of Troy actually having useful input for once. She doesn't detect anybody's freaking feelings. She actually gives good advice and a different point of view to match the captain.
I like the dialogue here, too. I like the dialogue where Picard's like, we need to stop Data from calling this, 100-kilogram android with the strength of 10 men a child. And, you know, Troy's kind of talking him down from that. It's like, okay, fine, if he has to, but I don't see how he can call something like that a child. And then Troy's just like, you've never been a parent. Because she has.
Yep, and like, she comes across, you know, it's like when we discussed that Voyager episode last month. It's like, she comes across like a psychiatrist, a counselor. What she's supposed to be.
Rather than someone who is just tells everyone what she's feeling at the time.
Yeah,
what she's feeling,
which is
they
just
feel.
A woman.
Her job is to, you know, have the best interest of the crew's, you know, well-being in mind. So
her and her professional capacity here, I think, you don't really see that very often in the series, unfortunately, but I think in this particular episode, they did a great job of showing her as a professional.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the professional capacity either. She's drawing on the week that she was a parent, which almost never gets called back to outside of this episode.
Also, a production question. This hallway is really long.
Yeah, I noticed that too. It's like it kept going. They built more sets for season three.
So did they just start, like, stacking their sets on top of each other?
Yeah, the crew. What you don't see is the crew in the background taking a section that they walked away from, running and shuffling and putting in front of them.
No, no. So like, here's the thing. It's just a circle.
And that was my next question. Is it a circle?
Yes.
Okay. And the power chamber is...
I mean, even in the context of the universe, it would be a circle because they're in one of the corridors in the saucer section.
That's
which
it's
should
a really
theoretically...
tight circle, though. Are they in the center of the saucer section?
It could be.
Could be.
Well, I mean, like, I'm sure somebody's actually done the math, but, like, what's the radius of... Like, what are the dimensions of the saucer to measure what a circle inside it would need to look like.
And wouldn't that be ovals?
Well, yeah. Like, there would have to be straightaways at some point, or, you know, near straightaways. So they're probably out on the sides where the curve is more sharp.
Yeah, but, yeah, you don't see a lot of, you know, you don't really ever see any, like, just, you know, straightaway hallways.
Very short sections.
Yeah.
Yeah, because filming that is also difficult, because you have to make it really long for it to look good.
Okay, yeah. So, like, you know, there's the curved corridor, which is used for most everything, but then branching off of that are straight hallways down to a turbo lift at the end and usually a transporter room.
Right.
So, Picard needs to have a little sit-down with old Yellow Eyes.
Oh, here it comes.
Yeah, so he goes, what the hell have you done making babies on my ship?
You know I hate children.
Yeah.
Which is why Wesley has been here for 3 years. Shut up.
Oh, he hates Wesley.
Well, yes, but he's still there.
Well, that's because also, he needs his mom on the ship, and he kind of killed her husband, so he owes her a solid.
But, season two, Beverly left.
Yep.
He could have tossed Wesley's ass off that ship.
He still owes her the solid.
Okay, yeah. Fine.
That's a pretty big solid, killing somebody's husband.
Well, I mean, he never did anything for Sisko.
Oh, damn.
Ouch.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if Jake had wanted us to drive a starship, he would have let him do it.
And, you know...
And that's the thing, too, because, like, Jake kept asking to learn to drive a runabout, and Sisko's always like, shit, no. What are you thinking?
And it's even worse with that, because, like, he literally just... I mean... He straight up killed her.
In well, fairness, and was like, a Borg at like, the time.
Still.
Her and, like, 12,000 other people, but yeah.
He has enough remorse over that in general. But then, you know, when he met Sisko, he's just like...
What I like about the meeting scene between Picard and Data is the fact that Picard gets so pissed. Because he doesn't even know what he's mad about. He just knows that he's mad.
Yeah, basically.
He's just like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, you know, you're talking to an android. You know that doesn't really convey well, right?
No, but it's the same thing we're talking about. Like, Picard is mad with one hand. With the other one, he's not quite sure what he feels about this, and he cannot get the two to come together.
Well, he does get them to come together against his forehead.
Well, yeah.
The double face palm.
Yeah, what I like, too, is this is season three, and this, you know, because we were doing earlier seasons before, now they have the newer uniforms. So, but in the background, you can see all the crew members with the old uniforms with a little piping on the shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
That's
like,
how they
so
weren't
only the
important.
Cool people get the new uniforms?
Yes, exactly.
It's a transition period, like in Generations.
It just lasts about two seasons.
They needed time to buy all the uniforms and we get them made.
And that's how it works in the actual Navy when they get new uniforms.
Oh, they just kind of cycle down?
Yeah, it's like, let's see, according to someone Alan on Ouija, who's been in the Navy, is that, yeah, that's how it works.
No, I think he's just a contractor for the Navy. Gabe's the one who's actually been in the Navy.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting mixed up, but yeah, the one who's actually... Yeah, it was Gabe who said that when they're getting new uniforms, there's a period where they can use either.
Hmm.
Huh.
And it's pretty much personal preference which they use during that time.
But no matter what, they're still full of semen. What?
So anyway.
Yeah, I like, again, the interview scene, it's like, because no matter how pissed Picard gets, Data just, like, deflects it logic. It's like, well, I did everything I'm supposed to do. Why are you mad? Why are you mad, bro?
Data is like, you know, it's the dynamic that you would have from someone like Spock if Vulcans were not assholes.
Right. Oh, God. And then they're walking the little pink rubbery thing through the ship, and it's wearing this big, fleshy diaper. Oh, God.
It's, oh God.
How is this a generic look? This is a very specific look. This is not generic humanoid.
Data has some weird kinks, okay? So let's not kink shame.
Oh, far be it from me.
I'm just saying, those are some pretty big pectoral muscles on that little android.
Not judging. Yeah,
did you see the butt?
I was trying not to
not
look.
Oh, look at that thing. It's like a camel's ass.
Wow, XB, that was
Oh, one thing I like, too, is the ship shots are very nice looking. You can really see the Aztec-ing. You can see, like, the green panels and stuff on the outside of the ship. That's something I never really noticed before, is how much green it was.
Yeah. The ship designer was very pissed off that it didn't come through in the original transfers.
And that's the thing, too, because, like, you would find merchandise here and there of the Enterprise where that's represented correctly, but because of standard TV, you would look at it and think, that's not what the ship looks like.
Yeah, and right. It's not just even standard TV. That's how the finished episodes looked.
Mm-hmm. So they make it to the holodeck, and as Data was telling Troy, oh, there's 1,000 different variations.
No, Scott. Not 1,000. Several thousand.
Several thousand. Yes.
Several thousand.
I like Troy's reaction to that. She's like, what?
Yeah. So I love the fact the next thing she's sleeping up against the wall.
Okay, so like
3 weeks later.
So yeah. Pile of bones. Like, from the first time I've watched this episode, I've had the issue with this scene. They're on the holodeck. Why didn't she at least like get herself a chair to sleep in?
Right.
She knew it was the holodeck. That chair could be deadly.
Good capsize. So
they start with an Andorian, which is green for some reason.
Okay, so
we know damn well Andorians are not green.
Here's my theory for this. Andorians have probably like receded from the Federation a little bit. They're not commonly seen. So this is kind of just like the stereotypical image of an Andorian, which is the best image they have.
Which is of a green Martian? I mean, come on.
Uh-huh.
And then the second body of the final four is a handsome man that Troy damn near jumps on top of and starts humping.
Yeah, well, we'll get back to that later.
The third one is Dr. K.
yeah, kind of.
Well, I mean...
Yeah. Certainly short enough.
Got the hair.
Which... The short bit makes the next selection even more hilarious.
So the fourth one's
the
Klingon.
The tiniest Klingon.
Yeah, no one, everyone knows nothing about the Klingon.
The 4 foot tall Klingon.
Yeah.
the littlest Klingon sounds like some kind of children's book.
It does. I would totally read that to my kids if anyone would procreate with me.
And the thing is, like, Troy
says...
You
just make your own, like, Data.
Well, that's what I'm saying. As Star Trek nerds, we can totally relate to Data on this because, you know, we have to procreate solo. So, you know.
So, Troy says that the Klingon body would be a friend for Worf. I really kind of think Worf would be deeply, deeply offended.
He would?
Yep.
And Troy should know this.
Maybe she does. And she's just...
She thought it'd be funny.
Yeah.
Because everybody shits on Worf.
Worf is suffering.
He is.
Here, Worf. So, Data made you a get... Go run along now.
And I'm watching through this as we're going, and it's a little ahead, but Worf does have some presence in the episode. He gets a line over the speaker, and that's it.
So he literally phoned it in.
He literally phoned this episode in.
Well, probably not as much as Shatner phoned in his lines for animated Star Trek, but you know.
Damn.
So now we're in the boring part of the episode where it's like, Law is like, this is a chair. And it's like, bird from that Bambi cartoon.
Yeah.
And this is the part I was kind of embarrassed. It's like, oh, this poor actress has to act like a, you know, it's just terrible. But man, it redeems itself later on.
I do like the gag for not knowing to swallow. Because that's something you need to teach a woman.
Oh, like you'd know.
Shit.
I can't tell you how much more interesting the interplay on the show has gotten since we've added Scott.
Yeah, we've never had anybody that could actually counter Mickey.
Well, no, we had JD.
Oh, yeah, we didn't have JD. Okay, we have not had anybody counter Mickey in a long time.
Yeah, JD was more than capable.
Yes, he was. He was.
I've gotten lax and soft.
You kind of flaccid, even.
Treachery keeps the wits sharp.
Well, I don't really counter him. I just have, like, a built-up immunity over decades. I have a callus over my soul.
You do not have
him.
A built-up immunity to decade yet, though.
No, no one can have that. Especially not Decade's hair.
If we ever force Scott into Toku, we need to probably sit him down with Decade.
God. And then wash the taste out.
And Bioman.
Anyway, so, we're losing track here.
I do love the fact that, yeah, again, they're doing the teaching thing, and she learns to swallow, like, as Mickey said. And then she even uses a napkin, and then Data just looks so surprised.
That's what that's used for? Holy shit.
Yeah, I was watching my Android.
Data ever eats anything.
So now they're explaining I copy my mind and my neural pathways to her brain, so I'm making kind of like a subtle copy of myself so she can learn. So apparently the process isn't complete yet, and they have a few more steps to go.
Yeah, this is kind of unclear. It implies that Data said, I copied all of my knowledge into her, but then she doesn't know shit.
Well, she has data banks full of data like Wikipedia, but she doesn't know how to relate it to like the real world or something. I don't know. I'm confused by that, too. They don't do a good job on that.
I think that would be the best – for how the episode plays out, that would be the best way to
– And I think they try to express that in the dialogue and just do it badly.
I think if it was coming at an age when they actually had Wikipedia, they would be able to express it better.
He didn't copy his knowledge. He copied his pathways and how his brain works into her so that her brain can form the same types of connections that he can.
Okay, so the whole motivation for him to make LOL was because he went to a cybernetics conference and discovered this new method of copying the neural pathways. So he figured he could use it as a shortcut to make a new positronic brain, which is really difficult to do and have it work.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, he is copying the structure of his brain, but I don't think that necessarily means he's copying the information inside. But there's also a line of dialogue that could be taken to mean that while she has all kinds of knowledge and information in her brain, she is still working on the process of the associative leaps to make it useful to her.
Right.
But
I think that's a word they actually use was the associations.
Yeah, again, I don't think it's expressed as well in the dialogue as it could be to make these concepts clear. But, like, you know, if you want to make the leap and assume that this is how it's supposed to mean, it can make sense.
Right, right. I mean, this is sci-fi, so there's always that leniency and benefit of the doubt that we give it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So they do the whole trope of the child asking, why?
And it's like, all right, enough of you, go to bed. Which I kind of feel like it was a parent who wrote this, and I'm going to put in my wet dream right now, an off button on my child.
Oh, here's everyone got their shots ready because we got to take a shot. Evil Admiral, everybody. Another Starfleet.
Let me get my spoon.
Corrupted
Let me get my spoon.
Admiral.
Do I have a tablespoon for this? Or?
Yeah, Mickey,
tie
out
your arms.
You need some shot bowls, Mickey.
It's like some ramekins.
I'm ashamed that I know what that word means now.
Now?
Know what it meant like forever ago.
No. There's a.
Have you ever been to a restaurant?
I didn't know what that was until I started dating a chef.
Did you say, give me a handful of barbecue sauce with these chicken fingers?
Yes.
Ugh. And I'm the one that lives in the uneducated South.
Didn't he used to?
So
yes,
the
he moved to fancy California.
The Admiral is trying to be understanding and wants to do what's best for LOL, which means, of course, separating her from Data. Picard's like, I don't know about that. And then that's about it.
We're worried that LOL's not running the proper combat simulations from Data.
We're going to set her preset kill count to be 999.
Listen, remember Commander Maddox from last year? He's really interested in what's going on right now. And he thinks it'd be a great idea for us to take custody of her and help her learn.
Yes.
So Data is trying to get Lol enrolled in school, and apparently this is like a one of those lottery schools, you know, they do a lot of hands-on stuff and not a lot of book learning.
Well, I think at the level she's in, it's less school and more daycare.
Yeah. So they get in the turbo lift, and there she knows she's different, and she's being laughed at. Blah de blah de blah, like a real child.
Yeah. So then Data decides to go talk to Dr. Crusher to find out about Wesley's childhood.
Because he's a model example.
He was a petulant child, Data. I don't care for him. It's the reason why I left this ship for a year. I couldn't take it anymore.
She had to get her hair more reddened.
She had to get some new wigs.
So yeah, the whole thing about Lol being made fun of in school is kind of interesting. How both her and Data have to appear to be upset by it without having emotions.
Right.
That's a tricky line to walk acting-wise.
Yes, yeah. And that's one thing I was about to say is, like, about this point, I start actually having sympathy for Lol because the actress does a really good job of conveying that of, I'm displeased by this, and it bothers me, but I can't show emotion to do that. I think you're right. They did an excellent job.
I think the direction and the camera work also helps a lot there, too. Yeah. How it pans from Data to the children to then seeing Rodolphe.
Stop kissing Frake's ass. We know what you're doing.
I completely forgot it was Frakes for a second again.
Yes, and this is why he's an in-demand director now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So he does an okay job.
Yes. Great.
And strangely enough, Tom Paris is a fairly demanded director too.
Okay.
Really? You know the TV
but
series.
He probably
Chuck?
Doesn't do everything in two takes.
Chuck. Yeah, I remember that.
That was his show, basically.
Really? I did not realize that.
He was the executive producer in that show, and he directed quite a few episodes himself.
That's interesting.
I was going to go back and watch more of that. I liked the first season.
Yeah, I never really watched that show. How did it turn out?
It's good. However, the ending really kind of fizzles.
I more meant from like a production standpoint.
Production is great.
They got canned though, right? So.
They got brought back for an apology finale short season type of deal.
Okay, yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, we'll give you let you do an ending.
Oh, like Mass Effect DLC?
Kind of, yes. But really, you can stop watching the first three seasons, and that's a good stopping point.
Okay. I always meant to go back to it one day.
So the guy who played Tom Paris, Neil Duncan something?
Robert Duncan McNeil.
Yes, thank you. Just losing some cred here. Right, you guys need angry letters about me now. He actually.
We would have to get letters at all, Scott.
No, I'm worried your mom won't like me very much. So he actually did some voiceover work for the for STO for the Star Trek Online. So they got of course they keep grabbing up all these old Star Trek actors and have them come in and reprise their characters. So he's like he was head of Starfleet for about 2 years, I think. He did the Kirk thing, which he was the head of Starfleet for a while.
Wait, Tom Paris was?
Well,
yes.
I guess 40 years in the future, that's almost plausible.
Still.
And I gotta say...
They knew he was a salamander, right?
Better him than Janeway.
Yeah. It's true.
And yeah, there's the whole thing with his dad being a higher up.
Oh
yeah, he got nepotismed into it.
My favorite.
Yeah.
He came back as a war hero and then just kind of rode the coattails all the way up.
Just like President Grant.
God, I love your Grant references.
I know.
They never get old, like, you know, 130 years ago. So, more importantly, Picard's nipple.
That won't ever be obscured.
No. They made a conscious decision to pull that vest over so we can see nipple 100% of the time. He showed that to the Admiral on purpose.
The Admiral's like, oh, shit, am I interrupting something? Picard's like, no, it's fine. She'll wait.
Yeah, his nipple's all like red and erect. It's like, no, it's just.
It's just very.
What they don't
cold
show
in
is
here.
That Picard's blouse stops right at the balls.
Blouse.
Or vest.
No, that, no, that's where his little shorts stop.
There are shorts?
Little shorts. It's alarming.
Red alerting. So, again, we have dead-eyed, evil-looking Admiral in the middle of the night, like a bastard.
Yeah,
and then he hangs
say,
up on Picard.
Think...
He hangs up on him. I mean, he basically did a fuck you click.
Like, you would kind of think all Starfleet ships and facilities would be on a common time. Unless they're, like, literally on a planet's surface.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So, well, yeah, is the Admiral back in on Earth, or where is he?
He is attached to a station at some planet.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's at the. Is he at the Daystrom Institute on that one planet?
The Daystrom Annex.
He talks
somewhere,
about it
somewhere.
Yeah.
But there's no implication that he's actually on it, so just that's where they want to be going.
Another reason why this episode is awesome? Guinan.
Yes. Hello, Whoopi Goldberg.
Back when you were awesome.
Yes.
Guinan is the most inexplicably successful character.
I love her. She's great.
She is, but it's like, you know, we're going to add Whoopi Goldberg to Star Trek and...
And make the character something that doesn't seem like it fits with Star Trek in any way.
And this is at a time when Whoopi Goldberg was big, and you have to think, it's like, oh god, that's some stunt casting there. They must be desperate.
Except Whoopi Goldberg asked to be on the show.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, so we had, Uhura on there, and Whoopi Goldberg has made comments before that she had a great deal of inspiration from Uhura's character on, because she always tells the story, like, oh, look, there's a black lady on TV, and she ain't no maid. You know, so it's a big deal to Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, but it'd be about the equivalent of saying, we're going to have Lady Gaga on our show, because she's popular right now.
Or, I know, Andy Dick or somebody. Oh, wait.
Oh, God.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But, yes, and quickly, Guinan became one of the best characters in the show because she's fascinating, and she...
I mean, she only shows up occasionally.
She just works.
She only shows up occasionally, but whenever she does, it's pretty great.
Well, yeah, she exudes that calm wisdom, you know, and that smile she always has on her face. Just looks, she just like she's completely in control all the time.
And here's the thing, too. Next Generation introduced recurring characters to try to break up the family atmosphere some.
Yeah.
But Guinan does that in a completely different way consistently.
Yeah, and it's like they make the absolute most of every time she appears.
Yes, because it's costing them a small fortune.
Yes, of course. That also. But
I call Guinan always this attitude like it's your DM suddenly showing up in your campaign. at you.
Look, here's the answer to your problem. Let me get back to work.
Oh.
You might not want to go to that planet. You might not like what's behind it.
Oh, dude. Oh, that's I've never done that as a DM before.
Or me.
Oh man. So in the scene, they go to 10 forward, and Lol discovers that she can use contractions, which blows everyone's fucking mind.
Really, I think the question everybody should be asking is, Data, why can't you use contractions?
Well, he's not just an android. He's actually an autistic android, so...
I don't know. I can use them.
Or does he just have, you know, a speech impediment?
I love you, Fort Max.
That sounds
you seem like glaring at the screen
knives.
Right now. Ooh, well, I thought it was cold in space. Okay, moving on.
Oh, boy.
Which one of us will you insult next?
Shut up, fatty.
Hey!
I wasn't talking to you.
Aw. Only 170.
Oh,
yes, the sad truth is I'm probably the fattest person here.
I'm 170 and about a quarter of it's all in one place.
Wait, you're 170?
Yes.
Fuck the hell out of you.
Well, what you gotta do is in your personal time is up to you, but we're trying to do a show now.
Kenneth's the problem with fucking multiple men.
It's very dangerous behavior.
Feel that high risk behavior. So we get Picard and Data back in.
I'm not the oldest one anymore.
Am I older than you?
Yes.
Dude, we're like in the same grade.
Yes, but you were born in October. I was born in the following February.
Oh, I am oldest. All right.
5 months.
Well, listen up, you little young punks. You better start doing
Even
what I want
Even if it's
by now.
5 minutes, it counts.
Yes. You're that petty.
And cruel.
Yeah. I'm more petty. He's more cruel. So Picard is having another little sit-down chat with Goldenrod here. And basically, they're going to take your baby away, just so you know. Do you care?
And there's almost echoes to this of the conversation from Measure of a Man, where Picard was like, well, maybe it won't be so bad being disassembled and copied.
Right. And this is before he turned to a Borg, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I would tend to think that gave him a different perspective on that whole matter.
Right.
Or you could call it poetic justice.
Yeah. Yeah, he deserved it. That's what it was. Q's just laughing his ass off.
Oh, man. Best of Both Worlds Part 2 would have been great if Q just showed up and sat around the whole time.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Doing literally nothing but making, like, snide comments.
Yeah, leaning against bulkheads and stuff inside the Borg ship, you know.
No. He wouldn't even... No, he would be hanging out with Riker.
God.
Trying to entice Riker with his Q candy.
You'd
solve all this if you took my powers. Why did you do that?
Why don't you just ram this into the Borg ship?
Oh, so Law's
yeah, but that was Riker's. That was Riker's final solution.
Oh, yes, but
when everything else failed, he was ordering Wesley to warp the Enterprise into the Borg ship.
Yes, but you know that would be how he got there.
Oh, okay.
He just like fed up with Q. I'm gonna like take him with me.
Which is
Look,
like
I don't care if everybody dies. Really. I don't have to listen to Q anymore. It'll be fine.
Then Q the afterlife. I mean,
Q the afterlife.
I did not mean to do that shit. That was a palatable level pun.
Well, Tapestry, though.
Well, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, this episode.
As a president. Go on.
So Lal's in 10 forward. And they're watching these, like, she and Guinan are watching these people make out. And Guinan is saying everything but, they're going to leave and go have the nastiest, raunchiest butt sex you can imagine.
But you can read that on her face and tone.
Oh, yeah, she's totally are going to just go to, like, wild, drunk monkeys.
I also want to point out the woman they're watching is someone Geordi tried to have a date with earlier this season.
Same character?
Oh,
well, same actress, so I assume so.
Poor Geordi.
All right. This is one of my favorite scenes.
Oh, yeah. Is this Riker?
So, Riker has been away. Yes. He comes back on a shuttlecraft.
Wait. Before that, though, we glossed over one really important part, which is how Lal got to be working in 10 Forward, which is that, you know, Data took her in there, and Lal said, my father said I could learn a lot from someone as old as you.
Yes.
And then Guinan's look and Data's just like, you know, blank innocence.
just that subtle look on Guinan's face, like
Wait, so did we know that she was Elorian at this point, that she was really old?
Well, we knew she was really old, but like her species hadn't been named. That doesn't happen until generations, I think.
All right, so as far as like anciently old wise people, who's more fuckable, Yoda or Guinan?
Guinan?
I know it's hard.
Is she wearing the hat at the time?
Yes. You're not escaping the green.
Either way, the answer is Guinan.
Yeah.
Who, all right.
I mean, really, Yoda. Come on, dude.
Well, Yoda has eyebrows, though.
Is that what gets you going?
Yoda has eyebrows for days.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what you're into, I mean, he's got it going on.
here's how you decide. Imagine each of their O faces.
Oh, God.
We've seen Yodas. Remember when Dagobah when he's like yelling?
Yeah, Luke fell.
Yeah.
imagine that, but being filled with green semen.
You're suffering, I like.
Why is it gotta be green? Why is it gotta be green?
Well, Mickey's right, white.
So anyway,
white,
moving on.
Probably.
Riker's been away. He comes back on a shuttlecraft, and I enjoy the fact that he boards, gets out of the shuttlecraft, goes to a turbo lift, goes 10 forward, and immediately goes to get a drink. Doesn't go to the quarters, doesn't say hi to the captain, immediately goes to 10 forward to get shit.
Doesn't go to the bridge, nothing at all.
No. Like, damn, Riker. He like tries to slide in. No one can see him.
What were you doing on your like days of leave exactly?
Drinking. Fucking.
So he comes back, and the first thing he wants to do is drink some more. And, well, you know, see what the day takes him.
He's still in vacation mode. He's still in vacay mode. So I did notice that, you know, when they were talking about, when Law was talking to Troy, he's like, oh, I'll take your appearance. And everyone was like, no, no, no. This is why. Because if Riker saw another copy of Troy, he would have fucked her immediately.
Kind of like what Troy did when there was another copy of Riker.
Yes. She's trying to keep that from happening to Lol.
Troy does her job sometimes.
You know what I'm just not realizing? Lol looks a lot like Dora the Explorer.
So does that mean Dora the Explorer looks like Dr. K?
It must be the hair.
Yeah.
It must be the hair.
It's the hair.
So, of course, Riker's reaction to being kissed is stunning. Data comes in and goes, what are your intentions towards my daughter?
And then the look on his face is just...
Yeah, it's a
that
great
scene. Really needs a laugh track inserted right then.
Yes, Guinan's reaction, everything about that scene is awesome.
Or like a Married with Children. Woo!
And all we needed was Jonathan Frakes directing himself getting kissed. Wait.
Yeah, well, that was kind of given. I don't know if he also picked out the actress. Younger.
More like Hemo Phillips.
So I'm going to be an android today. How do you feel about that? No? Okay.
No, that's pretty spot on.
He still does cameos and stuff on television shows.
Emma Phillips is great.
Yeah. So we're having another heart-to-heart with Data and Lol. They're talking about something. I don't know. Feelings or something.
I think this is the part where she realizes that she's never going to be a human.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's one kind of the weird thing. It's like, you know, the whole goal is to be more human. And Data is like, yeah, pretty much.
And then we can't.
Data's gross gray hand.
With well, and in the HD version, you can see also where half the makeup is rubbed off of it.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Which makes it even grosser, really.
Mm-hmm.
Prince Spiner's clammy, sweaty hands.
The Admiral rides in style. He's in an Excelsior class.
Well, it's hardly in style anymore. I mean, you know, that's last century Starship.
Well, Art Deco.
No, it's style, actually. It's like cruising around like a 57 Chevy.
There you go.
No. The Excelsior is the black Cadillac of Starships.
Yes.
I'm okay with that. So we're having a little discussion between Picard and Admiral Evil. And Picard is trying so hard not to say... How about you just go screw right off?
Well,
with all due
respect,
sir, just screw yourself.
Protocol and all, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, the Admiral comes here and goes, I'm going to take the child.
Well, and I like, okay, so like the scene opens with the Admiral sitting on Picard's couch in mid-sentence saying, no objective viewpoint could see this any differently.
Yeah, what a dick. Such
like
a
that's what his scene on the Enterprise begins with.
Yeah, they did such a hard job of making this guy just as big of a jerk as they could.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we get it. But again, it's always fun to watch Picard's reaction to the Admiralty and their lack of morals and him, you know, do his great big, you know, Shakespearean speeches. The line must be drawn here, no further.
That's actually pretty good.
Hey, I'm going to go get his whale.
Oh, God. We really do need to do First Contact sometime.
We just need to, like, just watch Lily's scenes, really.
Yeah, we have YouTube for that.
Yes,
First Contact, a Lily cut.
Well, watching Lily scenes means you also get most of Picard's scenes, so, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, that scene where Data gets a boner.
Yeah.
It's off camera, but you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If it panned down, we'd totally see full pneumatic action.
Ken, you know, oil.
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 And in Data's case, that's probably accurate.
Oh, God.
Data's hydraulic erection.
Prelude.
So we have Data and the Admiral, and they're in the lab. And at least the Admiral looks like and sounds like he actually knows something about robotics and androids. He's actually speaking like he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, because he's the Admiral overseeing the Daystrom Institute Annex on whatever the hell planet that is.
Right, right. Gaben so 4, or whatever.
So, you know, as opposed to the Admirals who are obviously only concerned with military stuff, this is apparently a science Admiral. Which, yeah, well, he's an asshole, it's nice to have confirmation that the science flag officers do exist.
Right. Well, he certainly didn't get to where he was, you know, and get his personality from the humanities.
No, he did not.
Also,
the only way I would really prefer this would be is if his admiral uniform was blue, just to concretely show, yeah, he came from the science division.
Yeah, unfortunately, because you go into command, I guess it has to be red. But yeah, I see your point completely.
There was a yellow uniform admiral in Deep Space Nine, I think.
Interesting. One thing I like about the admiral, too, is that he knows what a cocktail waitress is. Dude, what do you do with your spare time?
Look, he's on a starbase on a planet somewhere. Things happen.
I swear, you have her working as a candy striper. It's like, what are you talking about? What with her flapping and all and her doing the jitterbug? Listen to her jazz, you know.
Well, if Riker had his way.
What's your name and do you like jazz?
And there's that scene where she's in 10-4 working, and Admiral's like all freaking out that she's doing a job, and she's just staring at that couple who's trying to enjoy themselves, and she's like 2 feet away from their faces.
To be fair, they're doing a good job of ignoring her.
Yeah.
Well, she's been serving them a lot of drinks.
Yeah.
So is it synthahol or real alcohol they serve in 10-4?
Well, officially,
only Guinan knows.
Only Guinan knows. Sure.
Officially, it's synthahol, but Guinan keeps some of the real stuff around too.
Okay. Because what's the point of drinking if you don't actually get drunk, though?
You know, for people who know the password.
So sure, they go into.
I am most certain that Riker knows the password.
Riker knows a lot of passwords.
So. Yeah, the Admiral is just like, yeah, I'm going to take you. That's just what's going to happen. And Picard's like, it's okay. They're going to take you.
Away from your father. Yes. Forever.
And again, very good acting by everybody involved, I have to say. Lol did a really good job. At this point, I got so emotionally invested. I was like, oh, they're going to take her.
Did you say it like that?
I did. And when I had my bowl of ice cream and my stuffed bear, I was on my couch watching this alone last night. Yeah. I was wearing my little teddy, you know, my little see-through thing that I like to do. It's comfy.
Why is your bear see-through?
Oh, okay. Boring, boring, boring. Picard's getting pissed. Lol sitting there looking kind of scared. Blah-de-blah-de-blah. Well,
anyway, Lol's eventually excused and go from there.
Yeah. So, the cool thing is, Lol runs to Troy, and she is terrified. And she's like, they're going to take me. I feel scared. Troy's reaction is amazing, too. And this scene just really hit really well. The actress who did this just did such a great job. because she's standing there and she starts like touching her the pit of her stomach, and she's trying to explain what it feels like to feel fear. And it's just like, at this point, I was like, oh wow, this is really good.
I mean, it's not just that she's touching her stomach; she's kind of like just like pounding her fist into it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like it looks painful. You almost like feel sorry for her doing it to herself, you know. But it's like the only way, because we all have felt that fear and that worry, and it is, it's in the pit of your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanders out and then just kind of wanders down the hall. And Troy apparently doesn't follow her?
No, she does. She's right behind her.
Does she? Okay, even when she gets to the lab?
Well, I don't know about that, but she walks out the door with her.
Like, that's how we found out she goes to the lab. Cause...
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay, so
we're back. I like Troy's reaction to that seems like, oh, shit, you do feel something. That's not right.
Yeah, at this point, I was wondering, though, was she picking up anything on her on ESPN, or was she just, like, watching the verbal cues?
I mean, I kind of doubt... Well, no, oh, okay, no, actually, because at a later point, Troy can tell the difference between Data and Lore, because Lore has an emotional presence. So... theoretically, if you backtrack to this, she might be like actually sensing the emotion.
And that's what I'm wondering, because I mean, the look in her face, she seems concerned, but I was wondering, well, how much of that is her just seeing this, and how much of her being Betazoid?
And it may be like purposely ambiguous too,
because that becomes into writing holes of how you explain how her powers actually work.
And we can't have that.
No. You don't want to write yourself into an angle. So, again, it's Picard and the Admiral and Data, and we're going to take your baby, and no, don't take my baby. And this goes on for about 5 minutes of Picard being righteous.
It's at this point that Picard finally, like, reconciles the entire thing.
And it's like, dude, wait a minute. I wrote the book on android rights.
Yeah.
And it's also when he finally, like... without doubt in his mind anymore, decides that, yeah, this is Data's child and it's wrong to separate them.
Right, yeah, now. Admiral's like, later it'll be cool, but...
Yeah. Yeah, the Admiral's like, bitch, do not test me. And Picard's like, meh.
It's like, if they want to separate later, that's their decision.
Yeah, that's been a consistent thing through the episode. It's like... okay, you want to have Lol at the research facility. Okay, her and Data can go and hang out there, you know, stay together. You know, that doesn't fly. So then, like, even Lol's like, okay, when I've learned everything here, then I'll come there and learn what you have to teach me.
Right.
Like,
but the Admiral...
like nobody's really objecting to that she will eventually go there for further education or training or whatever they want to call it. It's just a matter of this is the wrong time to do it, and that's where the conflict comes from.
And the Admiral does have a very good point, and something I didn't think about was one stray shot from a Romulan will lose both of you. And I was like, oh, that's actually a really good – that's a good point.
And Picard concedes like, okay, that's a good point, but
– Yes.
But it doesn't make this not wrong.
Yeah.
Well, and I like Picard basically just finally standing up and being like, no, screw this. We're not letting the state take a child from its parent. That is wrong, and I am going to fight this all the way back to Earth.
Like, you might be my boss, but I'm going to go to your boss.
Right. Admirals love it when you go over their head.
Well, and like I kind of like the implication here that like Picard has already fought for an android's rights once. There is no reason he would not be perfectly willing and ready to go do that again.
Right.
Especially with, you know, prior history of it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
he has something to reference also.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, he wrote the book on it.
Yeah, he established the precedent in this, and I think he would be rightfully confident in feeling that he could extend it farther if he had to.
Well, he put down his foot. I mean, he said he was willing to fight for it. He was willing to give up his command. He would take a right to Starfleet. I mean, he went all in, which is awesome when Picard does that, because he never loses when he does that.
At that point, you know he knows he's right, and he is right.
Yeah.
Yes.
At that point, you know that he has to win, because there'll be consequences for him losing.
Well, if you want to take it to a crass storytelling level, hey, Mickey, then yes, that is.
I'm sorry, I'll just sound it too positive. I need to fix that.
They have to keep the status quo. Yes, yes, yes.
So they make it down to the lab where Lol is in her little station. And Troy's there with her. And she says, she just came right here. And they're figuring out there's something seriously, seriously wrong with her.
So apparently she has a cascade failure, which means her dishwashing soap isn't working anymore.
It's because they changed the formula. It's not as good as it used to be.
No, why are we making a podcast about Star Trek? We could be talking about dishwashing detergent. Think of all the brands.
Joy, hope, despair.
I want to make a dish soap called Despair.
Yeah. Sorrow.
I have some, but I keep it under the sink. It's my spare. It's Despair.
God damn it. Paladin.
Well, Scott, it's been interesting having you on the show, but I don't think this is
guys.
Working.
Oh, you'll never. I'll pick up my check on the way out the door.
Oh, by the way, you're not getting paid.
No. This is the kind of check you get in a restaurant.
Right, I got a bill for you guys.
Yeah. We're charging you.
Uh-huh. We've taken the liberty of adding a 25% gratuity.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, because I'm serving a party of more than three. So.
That way we get 5% for everybody else.
Our podcast reaches a group of 8 or more.
What with all the multiple men?
Oh. Oh, God. Oh, and I'm in California, too. Do I have to pay, the $15 minimum wage now? Oh, no. Yeah, because servers out here, you actually get paid, full minimum wage. They don't get that $2, servicing pay crap like other states.
Yeah, so true. I think in a situation like
water,
that.
So,
Yeah, no. I think.
Ouch.
Well, he's not wrong.
No,
oh.
He's
not. No, I think in a situation where servers get full minimum wage, you really shouldn't have to worry about tipping them anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of the argument. It's not been a fun one.
That's how it works almost everywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, tipping is specifically to make up for the pay they're not getting.
Right.
So, right. So apparently a cascade failure results in emotional awareness. Who knew?
Well, I don't know. So here's the thing about this.
The emotional awareness triggered the cascade failure.
They're not clear on that, though. That's the whole thing.
Well,
yeah, and I think if they had expanded upon that, it could be interesting to see if her emotions were a result of the trauma done to her.
Well, that's just it. I think they make it very clear that the fear that the animal put into her is what caused her failure. Not her emotional awareness, but the cascade failure was directly caused by him. He killed her.
It was literally a cascading effect.
Well, see, I don't know it's implied. I don't know if it's directly stated, though. I would think I'd prefer if it was directly stated, because that's a lot more Star Trek.
Basically, the Admiral wanting to take her away caused her to become aware of the concept of fear, and that led to one thing, which led to another, and it all snowballed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, maybe
they were just not, for once, not actually wanting to be as heavy-handed as that. I say for once. I don't realize. It's Star Trek, but...
Yeah, I don't know. In watching it, I wasn't convinced that the emotion is what the problem was. It was the fact that he... Oh, maybe it was, because the emotion was fear. But what if it had been joy or love? Would she have still had a cascade failure? Or was it because it was such a negative, destructive emotion?
That's a good question.
Well, I think the joy or love would only be if, Riker had taken her back to his quarters and...
Well, no. It wouldn't have been Riker taking her back. It would have been her dragging up Riker. And then
15 minutes later, Riker would be calling into sick bay because his lower body was now a soft, pulpy mass.
Well, I was going to think he was going to come out
bewildered,
frizzed out, and
smoking. Bruised.
He's got a cigarette in his mouth.
What I'm saying is she would have literally crushed his entire lower body.
Death by snooze new.
Because, again, she's a 100-kilogram android with the strength of 10 men. You probably don't want to get under that.
That sounds like how you introduce a pro wrestler.
That really is a good line.
like a piston. Man,
yeah, that tells you they should introduce Connor or something.
Entering the ring, the 100-kilogram android with the strength of 10 men.
Versus Bonesaw. Oh, yeah.
But is he ready?
All right, so we have Wesley and Troy.
And Jordy. Don't forget Jordy.
And yeah, who could forget Jordy? Sitting outside the operating room like worried parents.
Yes, apparently they're the only ones among the crew who actually care.
Right.
Or even now, know about it.
And this line was so great. You know, that his sadness, what happened, and him admiring Data for how quickly he worked. You know, him describing his hands moving so fast that he couldn't see them. All of that I thought was just super cool.
Well, yeah, and the Emperor was like, can I assist? Well, you can stand there and look pretty, but you probably won't be able to actually help him much.
Right. Well, the Admiral is an android expert, so,
or cybernetics or something.
Cybernetics. Yeah.
I get what they're going for here. They're trying to portray him as slightly more sympathetic, as not just an asshole. That he was trying to do what he thought was right. Mm-hmm. I feel like that the tonal shift in his character was a little too abrupt to be convincing.
It was, and I think the intent is that he was not trying to specifically be antagonistic toward anyone. But the episode required him to be written that way, and then when it came time that, he needed to be, not redeemed necessarily, but, just show that...
When he didn't need to be... When that part of the plot was done, he didn't need to be all antagonistic.
He should have been more written when he's being antagonistic as that he should have been stressing he was doing what's best for the android.
Right. That's the whole point.
Stressing that what Data's doing is not what's right.
Yeah. The script needed an antagonistic presence, so he had to be written that way, even though this makes it clear the intent should have been. Yeah, the whole time he thought he was doing what was right to preserve the androids.
Yeah, because at no point did Ashley want to cause any harm to anybody. He didn't want to take her part or anything. He wanted for her to fulfill her potential in a place that would allow her to do it. I mean, that really was his core belief.
Mm-hmm.
He was just being a dick about it.
But interesting how this episode plays out if he was written from that different angle of not saying that Data's a bad parent, but saying that it's better for us to raise her in a different environment, and here's why.
Well, I think this ties back into everyone complains about Starfleet and the Federation, especially as being arrogant. So all the bad guys always say, oh, Federation's so arrogant. I think this is a prime example of because we're so advanced and we're so awesome, we know better for everybody. The Admiral exemplifies that completely.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
He comes in with this knowledge, with good intention, but with a holier-than-thou attitude.
Yeah, because even though he is looking for what he thinks is the best interests of Lal, he's still disregarding that for his own beliefs because he's rejecting the alternatives that are being given to him, where he will still get, in the end, what he wants.
Yeah, he's still a dick.
He's just not an evil dick.
No, yeah, he's just a regular dick. Yeah, he's like an Andy dick.
No, he's not an Andy dick. He's not evil. He didn't kill Phil Hartman.
Oh God!
Well, if I didn't say it, Fort Max probably would have.
Yeah, well, if John Lovitz could show up and kick the Admiral's ass, that would be awesome.
Oh, that would be awesome.
It stinks, and then beats the shit out of him.
I'd sub under Captain Lovitz any day.
Oh my God! Oh, we're not in the neutral zone. Yeah, that's the ticket. We don't have cloaking technology. Yeah, yeah. So the Admiral comes out. There's nothing we can do to save her. She's dying. Get over it. Boo, friggity hoo. I'm going to wander off and never be seen again. And then we have this very touching scene of Data and Lal saying their goodbyes as she slowly fades away into unconsciousness.
And just that I will feel for both of us. That's the one that got me.
The pause when she says, I love you, and I love you, Father, and the Data just stares at her. That pause
that's
kills
horrible.
Me. Kills me. He wants to say it so bad.
you know exactly what's coming too. It's the bad thing. Mm-hmm. You're like, Data, please stop talking. Please stop talking.
Oh. But he pauses because he's searching for the appropriate way to express it without sounding cruel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because he could say, I cannot, but he said, he basically says, unfortunately, as much as I want to, I can't.
But he could have lied. He knows enough. He's been around humans long enough that sometimes a little white lie can spare people feelings. He could have said, I love you
but
too, not
knowing
he didn't
feel
it.
That he was lying.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but wouldn't the gesture be meaningful even to her, though?
I think she's too simple to appreciate the complexity of that.
Probably.
I think perhaps. She would have questioned, why are you lying? You can't do that.
Yeah, true.
It would have been a few years of development for her before she would probably get the whole gesture thing.
Isn't that sad that you had to be advanced to appreciate a good lie?
Yeah.
What does that say about us, you know?
That we're pretty damn sophisticated?
Yeah.
Said no one about this podcast ever.
Yeah. So they say their goodbyes, and it's all very sad.
Except for Data, he's fine.
Yeah, Data's totally cool. Feels cool as a cucumber. So what did they do with her body after this?
Oh, God.
Back into the replicator?
Yeah, like piece by piece?
Probably just up in that tube.
some maintenance engineer's like, what the fuck is this?
No.
Well, no. Lol just returned to where she began, a fleshlight.
Oh.
Rutgers like, are you done with that?
She just got left in the saucer. She just got left there, still in the saucer section after it crashed.
Yeah, the aliens on that planet find the body.
There's squirrels living in it.
Well, if she wanted nuts in her mouth.
Her hair has become a literal bird's nest.
Someone's using her head as a bucket.
It's like as Data enters the bridge.
Yeah, he enters the bridge. He goes, nope, it's all cool. We're like, oh, we're sad for you. And he's like, nah, I don't care.
I'm sorry for your loss.
That's nice and all, but actually...
I saved her brain to a floppy diskette.
I'm going to store it next to Optimus Prime.
I get that reference. Oh, so that was, in my opinion, a very, very excellent episode.
Yeah.
We can't have that ever happen again.
No?
Only terrible episodes.
Well, there's only so many terrible episodes. And if we stuck to that rule, we'd most likely see
so many terrible episodes
next week.
Shit, so that means we're going to have to watch something good then.
So I've had a request come in for this, and I want to float it by the group here. The request is for You Are Cordially Invited, which is, you know, the wedding of Worf and Dax. I'm not particularly invested in this either way, so...
Is that like your mom's favorite episode, or what?
No, that's Melvar from RFC who put in for that one.
Oh, okay.
Still, if there's any better ideas, I'm certainly not opposed.
Well, that's kind of in a gray area of DS9 that I'm not super familiar with, so I'll have to definitely watch it and kind of get caught up on it.
I don't know, because I feel like watching a Worf-centric episode on DS9 is kind of cheating a little bit, at least right now.
You mean like watching a Barclay-centric episode of Voyager?
That's totally cheating, but we're okay with that. And you know why.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I don't even like that episode that much.
Is that the one that had the pain sticks? Didn't they have to like walk through like a row of Klingons?
No. We're talking about the episode of Voyager where Barclay was on it.
Oh no, I'm talking about the one that's been requested. Sorry.
No, you're thinking of a second season Next Generation episode.
Oh, okay. Pain sticks. I remember pain sticks. Or maybe I'm thinking of Marriage in General. Maybe that's what it is.
I don't know, you're the one who's engaged.
Yeah, that's true. God, I'm so glad she doesn't listen to this podcast. I'm kind of vowed myself to say that every episode.
Yeah, what if she actually does?
Then I'll have a lot more time to spend with you guys.
Well,
what about our man Bashir?
That might be too good for us.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe we need to focus on earlier Deep Space Nine.
Oh, back when Sisko had hair?
You know what we need to do? We need to do a Quark episode.
Yeah, Quark's always good. Or Nog. Something with Nog.
Well, that puts us in later Deep Space Nine again.
Oh, does it? Okay. Then Quark.
Well, for any meaningful content, yes. Let's see.
Maybe something with Grand Nagus and their mom.
Let's get the episode list.
Or something really good, like Little Green Men, where they go back to Roswell.
Little Green Men.
What's the episode where Quark's mom marries the Grand Nagus? And, like, ruins Ferengi culture forever.
That was one of the final episodes.
Yeah, they were really tying up loose ends then, weren't they?
Let's see. Like, we could do something from season 2. Maybe. Maybe this would be it?
The which one?
This one.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Just read the like, two-sentence summary at the start of the article.
Oh, my God. Are you sure this isn't from yep. Star Trek this Season 8 amazing. Twitter?
Yes, this is some TNG Season 8 summary.
Yeah.
Quark feels threatened when a con artist arrives on the station and opens up a competing bar. Meanwhile, Chief O'Brien is determined to beat Dr. Bashir at racquetball.
Oh, God, I remember this episode.
Right, so.
Next week, Star Trek.
Is what we're doing?
This is what we're doing. Next week on that one episode of Star Trek for Deep Space Nine, we're watching Rivals, which is episode 11 of season 2. You're welcome.
Good.
In my day, I could have wiped the court with him.
Yeah, you're right. This does sound like a
it does.
From the Next Generation Season 8 Twitter.
It does. Quark excites his customers. Oh, I bet he does.
I like this too, because there's like this one great line partway through the episode where Bashir says he could have taken O'Brien's pulse just by watching the back of his neck.
Is it possible to determine someone's pulse by staring at the back of a man's neck?
Possibly.
Depends on their pulse. Is it something we're going to try?
Well, I don't know. Whose neck is handy?
Oh, dear.
Yeah, this is going to be good.
Yeah, I think we got our episode, gentlemen. Good choice.
Oh, man, the wardrobe in this episode.
Oh, yeah, the con man looks fabulous.
No, not even that.
What about the racquetball uniform? Is that in the MMO?
No, this.
Yeah, feels like some curtains fell down on her.
Well, I was thinking she's wearing a purse. Because, like, if you look behind her neck, there's the handle.
Okay, why does Koss have Tom Baker's hair?
And where's his scarf?
I think he's wearing the scarf.
Where?
Doctor Who was in a really rough place in the 90s.
Yeah, oh, man, this is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's got Dabo girls. It's got people with phasers. There's all kinds of crazy shit going on.
Yeah, this will be fun because we're going into the seedy underbelly of the Star Trek universe here.
And we also get some wacky Star Trek pseudoscience that makes everything work. So that'll be fun, too.
Yay, technobabble.
Uh-huh. Like, stuff that makes literally zero sense.
Like hydroxylated quint-ethyl-meta-ketamine?
the hell did you just say?
I almost made it. Hydroxylated quintethyl metaketamine.
I know ketamine.
Well, this is maybe it's C because it's a C. Maybe it's cetamine. Bashir finds there are 17 milligrams of hydroxylated quintethyl metacetamine. Okay, if you nerds don't know what that is, I'm just so disappointed. Apparently it's an anesthetic. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Beats me, dude.
Oh, brilliant.
Is it related to a self-sealing stem bolt?
There is a mission in the MMO to go to DS9 and then trade between like six people to get a case of them.
Okay.
Riveting, I know.
Oh, God damn it.
What?
That joke.
Excellent. All right, so hopefully this next episode won't be nearly as full of feels.
No, I don't think it is.
Okay, good.
No.
Yeah, looks like a good episode.
There's a woman wearing a purse. What could go wrong?
Well, the change could fall out. That would probably be uncomfortable.
The peppermints and tampons.
Yeah, if the tampons fall out of a woman, that's usually a bad sign. Something is clearly wrong.